Good morning. Good-ish. Sorry about the change of date. The office had requested that we move it to the 22nd. I hope it didn't disrupt everybody's plans for the year that have been made since we put out the schedule months ago. This is one of the sessions that's most relevant for a medical practitioner, and not just medical practitioner, frankly, it has applications far beyond medicine, but certainly within the practice of medicine. Sometimes we have a class and it focuses on one particular aspect and one particular type of medicine, but this is across the board. And the question that I want to look at is the very difficult choice that a doctor faces when, on the one hand, patient care is a mitzvah in its own right, and it's clearly very important, it's clearly a priority, but a doctor may say, I want to fulfill all my mitzvahs. I don't want to only do the mitzvah of taking care of people who are ill, I'd also like to do the mitzvah of davening. How am I supposed to juggle the two? And it's not only davening. Davening happens to be a good example of it, but it will apply with tzedakah, it will apply with having siddurim and learning Torah, it applies with all the other mitzvahs that you face. As you set up your day, let's say in a clinical situation or in terms of surgery or whatever it is, how do you balance the practice of medicine with the various mitzvah obligations? So, as always, all practical questions go to the shul rabbi. We're just discussing the halachic issues that are involved. This is one certainly that I think carries a lot of relevance. And to address these cases, we have to start with the Gemara in Sukkah. And the Gemara is really what sets up everything else. If you take a look at source number one, the Gemara here is initially discussing not mitzvahs in general, but the mitzvah of sitting in a sukkah on sukkahs. And so the Mishnah says, Shluchei mitzvah, peturin min hasukkah. Those who are en route to do a mitzvah are exempt from sukkah. When we use the word shaliach, often that connotes someone is sending me somewhere to do. That's not what we're talking about here. You're not being sent to do something. You're actually on your own going to do a mitzvah. So an example of this actually that's mentioned in the Gemara is someone who is on his way to go learn Torah. He needs to go to another town. That's where his rabbi is, and he's going to hear a shir there. So that's someone who's on his way to do a mitzvah. So such a person is exempt from sukkah. And the Gemara wants to know how you know that. Minahani mili, the Tanu Rabbanan, the sages taught, the Torah says, b'shivtecha b'veisecha, regarding Shema. When you are sitting in your house, you have the obligation to say Shema. Prat la'osek b'mitzvah. So that excludes someone who is involved in a mitzvah. Meaning, you say Shema if you're sitting at home. However, if you're involved in pursuing a mitzvah, then you're not obligated to say Shema. Then you'll be exempt from saying Shema. To which the Gemara asks, is it really deduced from that pasuk regarding Shema? I think it's actually deduced from something entirely different. V'ha'osek b'mitzvah pater ben ha'mitzvah me'hacha nafka. Do we really deduce that from here, from this pasuk of b'shivtecha b'veisecha? Me'hasam nafka. It's deduced from over there. We have another source. Disanya, the following brisa, the following lesson. It's talking about something that's going to come up actually on our luach in just 14 days, given that today is the 30th of Nisan, 15 days, and that is Pesach Sheni. Remember that the Jews are in the Midbar, they're in the wilderness, they've just observed Pesach, and there are people who come to Moshe and say, we can't observe Pesach, we are tamei, we are impure from contact with a dead body. We'll see why in just a couple of minutes, but they were tamei, and they say to Moshe, we are going to miss out on observing Pesach. Why should we lose out? We want the chance to observe Pesach also. And Moshe consults with God, and he is told, yes, there's something called Pesach Sheni. Those who miss the first Pesach can catch the second one. But the Gemara wants to know, why didn't they simply purify themselves? Why didn't they go through the 7-day purification process, and then they could have participated in Pesach with everybody else? Why are they exempt from just purifying themselves? And that's what we see here. Vayihi anashim asher hayu tmeim lenefesh adam is the pasuk. It's in the Torah in Parshas Behalosha. And there were men who were tamei from Nefesh Adam, meaning Tamei Tumas Meis, from contact with the dead. And the Gemara asks, Osam Anoshim Mihayu, who were these men who were impure, who came to Moshe to ask? And we have a few different views. One view is, Nosei Arono Shel Yosef Hayu. They were people carrying Yosef's casket. Divrei Rabbi Yosi Aglili. Remember that Yosef was in Egypt, his body was in Egypt. They took his body out and carried it to Israel, where it was ultimately buried in Shechem. There's a fantastic closing of a loop there, when you realize that that's where Yosef was kidnapped from in the first place, was the city of Shechem. So Yosef was returned there and in fact buried there. But because these were people who were carrying Yosef's casket, that's why they were impure. Rabbi Akiva gives another answer tied into the parsha we read in Shul yesterday. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Mishael ve'el Tzafan hayu, shayu oskin benada va'avihu. Rabbi Akiva says it was Mishael and El Tzafan. They were family members of Nadav and Avihu who died on the day of the dedication of the Mishkan. And that's why they were impure, because they took care of the bodies of Nadav and Avihu. That's a second answer. Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, Rabbi Yitzchak says, I don't understand. If they were in fact the people carrying Yosef's casket, then they could have purified themselves. They knew in advance. It's not like it was a mystery when Pesach was going to happen. The assumption here is the Jews did not travel in the week leading up to Pesach, so it's not like the body needed to be moved from point A to point B. So they could have purified themselves, para aduma, whatever is required, could have been taken care of. So that can't be. And if Mishael ve'el Tzafan hayu, and if it was Mishael and El Tzafan, yecholin hayu litahir, they also could have purified themselves, because Nadav and Avihu died on the first day of Nisan. You have 15 days between then, or 14 days between then, and when you're going to bring the Karban Pesach. Ella oskin b'meis mitzvah hayu. Rather, these were people who were involved in taking care of someone who had died, and there was no one to bury him. There was no immediate family. There was no one available to do the burial. So that's that's who it was. So the Gemara is bothered. Why did you bring in the pasuk from Shema? If from the example of Pesach Sheni you learn that someone who's involved in burying the dead is exempt from Karban Pesach. Why did you need to bring me the pasuk from Shema? So the Gemara says, Tricha, it was needed, each one teaches me a lesson. So for example, the fact that you bring the Karban Pesach one as an example is important, because if you had only told me about exemption from Shema, I would have said, Shema is a mitzvah aseh. It's an active mitzvah, going and reciting Shema. But if you miss saying Shema, it's not, so to speak, the end of the halachic world. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm not in any way sanctioning it. People should say Shema, and they should say Shema on time. However, in the hierarchy of mitzvos, missing an active mitzvah is not as bad as missing Karban Pesach. There are 36 different actions or inactions which warrant the punishment of kares, of divine excommunication, of Hashem cutting off a person who commits that crime. There are 36 different krisos, as we call them. And one of them is missing the Karban Pesach. If a person misses the Karban Pesach, Hashem says, I want nothing to do with that person. That's how important Karban Pesach is. So we need to bring the Karban Pesach case in order to teach that even when you're dealing with mitzvos of greatest severity, someone who is involved in one mitzvah is exempt from taking on this other mitzvah. So I need both sources. And there's a reason to bring the Shema one also. I'm not going into it at the moment. But that's our first part. This opening source, in source number one, teaches me that one who is involved in one mitzvah is exempt from another mitzvah. That has clear applications regarding the physician who is involved in healing a patient, whether you're talking about life-saving or whether you're even talking about standard medical care, which comes under the general rubric of, let's call it Hashavas Aveda, restoring lost objects, although there are different explanations you could give for what mitzvah is being fulfilled, but it's clear you are fulfilling a mitzvah in taking care of someone who is ill, so therefore you're exempt from other mitzvahs. But the Gemara continues, and there are important lessons to be learned from the continuation of the Gemara. Continuing still in source number one, Tanya. Tanya, Braisa says, Amar Rav Chananya ben Akavya, Rav Chananya ben Akavya said, Kosvei Svarim Tefillin Umezuzos. Those who are scribes, who are writing Sifrei Torah, who are writing Tefillin, who are writing Mezuzos, they are engaged in the mitzvah of creating more Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzos. Can you define a mitzvah in the Torah of right Tefillin? No. Can't. There, you won't find a mitzvah in the Torah of right Tefillin. There's a mitzvah of wearing Tefillin. There's a mitzvah personally to write a Sefer Torah. Does that apply after I've written my first one? Is there a mitzvah of writing another one, assuming you're not a king? A little dicey. So we're told here, nonetheless, writing Sfarim, Tefillin, and Mezuzos, as well as Hein Vitagarehen, they're merchants. Meaning, the person who buys the Sefer Torah off of the scribe to sell it to somebody else. Vitagare tagarehen. And the retail merchant at the end of the line. We're assuming there's a middleman and there's a wholesaler and the whole bit. All the merchants down the line. The chola oskin bimeleches shamayim. And anyone who is involved in the work of heaven. La asuye mochre techeles. Which we say in order to include people who sell techeles that will be used to dye tzitzis. All of these people are Peturin Mikriashma, Uminat Fila, Uminat Filin, Umikom Mitzvah, Samuros Batara. They're exempt from Shema, they're exempt from Shmona Esrei, they're exempt from Tfilin, they're exempt from all the mitzvahs that are mentioned in the Torah. L'kayim divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili, which fulfills the words of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Shahir Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, Ha'osek b'mitzvah, Pater min ha-mitzvah. You're involved in a mitzvah, you're exempt from a mitzvah. Now, what's the chiddush? What's the novelty in including tefillin merchants? What's the novelty in adding that as opposed to the person who's going to hear a shir, let's say?
It's
non-continuous. You could set right. You could satisfy both. That's part of it being non-continuous, right? Hey, I'm sitting in my store waiting for someone to walk in the door. Am I exempt from Shema at that moment? It sounds like it from here. I am waiting to sell. Not only that, you take the person who's writing the Sefer Torah, writing the Tefillin, he can pause for 5 minutes and say Shema. Right? I mean, he doesn't have to write straight. I'm assuming that it isn't that there's someone waiting there to put on tefillin and who needs him to finish quickly before sunset so he can fulfill tefillin today. So why is it that we are exempting him? Not only that, it opens up a very interesting possibility. We talk about tefillin merchants. So does that mean that someone who's in it to make money is also exempt? He's a tefillin merchant. He's not doing it because he's engaged in a mitzvah. He's doing it because he wants to sell tefillin. So is that now going to exempt him from Shema? That's a remarkable idea. It's not necessarily how we're going to conclude, but we need to understand this case better. And then the last part of this Gemara in source number one. Tanu Rabbanan, the Braisa says, and this will go back to the non-continuous question, the law when it comes to sukkah, this is a unique sukkah rule. This is not about general mitzvahs now. The rule regarding sukkah is that someone who is traveling on the road from point A to point B is exempt from sukkah while he's traveling. So, holchei drachim bayom, someone who is traveling during the day, peturim min ha-sukkah bayom, they're exempt from sukkah during the day while they are traveling, but v'chayavim balayla. Come nightfall, they're going to camp anyway, so they have to get a sukkah. Holchei drachim balayla, someone who is traveling at night, so peturim min ha-sukkah balayla, is exempt at night, v'chayavim bayom, but is obligated by day. Holchei drachim bayom u'balayla, someone who is on an urgent mission and is traveling day and night, so peturim min ha-sukkah, bein bayom u'bein balayla, they're exempt both times. That's easy. But now he says, holchem l'dvar mitzvah, people who travel for a mitzvah, even if they're not currently on the road, Peturin bin Bayomu bin Balayla are exempt from any other mitzvah. They're going to do one mitzvah, they're exempt from others, whether by day or by night. This seems to be an extreme exemption. Right? It sure sounds like an extreme exemption. So we need to figure out the application of this Gemara, but offhand, if we stopped the shiur here 15 minutes in or 13 minutes in, we would say, okay, that's it. So the physician, while he's seeing patients, is exempt. And not only while he's seeing patients, but any time, it sounds like, he's someone who's involved in pursuit of a mitzvah. Yes?
You keep saying he.
Yes. I'm going to get back to the question of she in terms of davening. For all intents and purposes, everything I'm saying at the moment is he and she. It's either way. I keep saying he because I'm a male, and so it's the natural pronoun, but it includes she as well. We're going to come back to the question of whether there's a difference in terms of davening for women. Okay, sorry.
If you're doing something and you're being paid for it, is that still considered a mitzvah? Is that still considered a mitzvah?
Good question. So that's one of two clarifications even before I do the clarifications, that to me comes out of the tefillin merchant question. And I think that once we resolve what's going on with the merchant, that will answer the question of somebody who is paid. But actually, two clarifications before I can get there. Number one is this exempts him from fulfilling a mitzvah. It does not permit violation of a prohibition. He doesn't have the option of saying, "I'm engaged in a mitzvah, therefore I can eat a cheeseburger." Right? I am now doing surgery. Therefore, I can wear shabbos or whatever it is. That's not osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. It just means that someone who's involved in a mitzvah is exempt from a mitzvah asay, from an active mitzvah. That's number one. Number two, when we talk about davening particularly, it's important to remember that there are three states of obligation. One is obligated. Chayav, a person has to daven. Up the opposite extreme, Potter, exempt from davening altogether. But in the middle, you have the case of a person who is exempt from davening right now, but will have to do a makeup. Is going to need to daven a second Shmona Esrei next time. He missed his chance now for a legitimate reason, but he's going to have to do a makeup at the next davening. So, when we say someone who is involved in a mitzvah is exempt, if that exemption is through the entire period of davening, so let's say the earliest time to daven mincha was 1 o'clock, and the latest time to daven mincha was 5 o'clock, and from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock he was involved in a mitzvah, then he's entirely exempt, and there is no need to do a makeup later on. However, let's say he had a surgery scheduled for 2:30 in the afternoon. So he walks in to do the surgery at 2:30. At 3:30 he recognizes, wait a minute, I didn't daven mincha. Now what do I do? Well, he's involved in a mitzvah right now, therefore he's exempt. He does not stop the surgery to daven mincha. However, he's going to have to daven a second Shmona Esrei at Maariv. The reason being that he did have an obligation from 1 o'clock until the surgery started. Because he was obligated at one point, he's going to need to do a makeup later. So that's an important principle to keep in mind. Okay, having said that, I now turn to the question of, what if it is in fact Efshar L'Kayem Shneihem? What if it's possible to do both mitzvahs? You have the mitzvah of davening, and you have the mitzvah of taking care of patients. So what if you could legitimately do both? You are the person who's writing the tefillin, and you could stop writing the tefillin in order to say Shema. So are you obligated, in fact, to do both mitzvahs? So take a look. Actually, don't take a look, because I didn't bring it on your sheet. But the answer is it's a machlokas. Tosfos, writing on our Gemara in Sukkah, the Rosh as well, say, if he can do both mitzvahs, he's obligated to do both mitzvahs. That's their position. However, the Ran, who I did bring on the sheet, disagrees. Take a look, please, at source number 2, and you'll see the comments of Rabbeinu Nisim. He says, "Helu betosvos, delo petiri, elahecha sheim yikaimu mitzvah sukkah, yibatlu mi mitzvah sehen." Tosvos suggested, he says, that you're not exempt unless fulfilling sukkah, in the case in particular here, would remove you from doing your other mitzvah. V'armidim b'gemara, and the Gemara has a story, d'rav chista v'rabba bar rav huna ki avu aili l'shabsa d'rigla l'bei reish galusa. Rav chista and rabba bar rav huna went to hear the big shir on the Shabbos of Yom Tov, meaning the Shabbos during Yom Tov. They went to the house of the exlark to go hear it. They had to travel in order to do so. Havu ganu ariksa d'sura, and they slept by the shoreline in the city of Sura, and the implication is not in a sukkah. They camped out, and they didn't use a sukkah. Va'amri anan shluchei mitzvah anan, and the reason was they said we are involved in mitzvos, therefore we're exempt from sukkah. Upatrinan b'kiyai gavna nami who the upatrinan b'kiyai gavna. And they are exempt. We are exempt in such a case. So they said, we're traveling to hear the shir. Therefore, we don't need to fulfill sukkah. Even while we are camped out. Right? Even while we are camped out. So he says, wait a minute. He says Tosfos will explain it to mean de'imitridu b'kiyum mitzvah sukkah havu mefagri mi mitzvah son. That the reason why they are exempt from sukkah is because had they been required to go hunt up materials and build a sukkah, that would have slowed them down. They wouldn't have gotten to go here this year. That's the way Tosfos understands it. In other words, if you could do both, you would have to do both. If they had a sukkah available, they would be obligated to go sit in the sukkah when they're not traveling. That would be that's Tosfos' position. But the Ran says no. V'lo nira li kein. To me, that does not appear to be correct. D'pashta d'milsa l'mashma kein, because a simple read of that Gemara doesn't sound like it. He says you're in your way to do a mitzvah. You are exempt from other mitzvos. Flat. You're exempt from other mitzvos flat out. There is no obligation. They're traveling to go here this year. They are exempt. Remember what we said before when we said people who are traveling are exempt from sukkah only while traveling. That wasn't in pursuit of a mitzvah. That was just general traveling. What he's talking about now is someone who's traveling to do a mitzvah, and in that case he's exempt even when he's not, even if he could do both effectively. It's a non-continuous pursuit of his mitzvah. So the way the Ran presents it is, in fact, I am exempt even if I could manage to do both. However, the Ran does add one caveat with a principle which is very important in halacha beyond our discussion today. The point the Ran makes is based on source number 3. Source number 3 is talking about Tefillas HaDerech. We have the traveler's prayer that one says when he's on his way from point A to point B, traveling through a dangerous area, different explanations of what constitutes a dangerous area. That's not our point right now. The question that he has is, how do you daven Tefillas HaDerech? How do you say Tefillas HaDerech? If you are walking on the road, if you're riding in a wagon where you are leading the wagon, do you have to stop in order to say Tefillas HaDerech? Or can you say it while the wagon is moving, while you are walking? The concern is concentration. Can you concentrate properly while you are leading a donkey, while you are leading, while you are riding a wagon, whatever the case may be? Or do we say you have to stop in order to make sure that you will concentrate properly while saying this bracha, while saying Tefillas HaDerech? So take a look at source number 3. Vehechi matzli lo. How do you say Tefillas HaDerech? Rav Chisda Omar Me'umud. So Rav Chisda says, while standing, he does it, his point isn't standing versus sitting, his point is not while traveling. You have to stop. Now, you're riding in an airplane, that's not an issue. Because, number one, the airplane isn't going to stop in midair, but number two, you have no deficit of concentration in the airplane. The point is, you're walking, you're the one riding in the wagon and directing the horses or the donkey or whatever it is, you can't concentrate. So he says you have to stop. Rav Sheshes Amar, afilu mahalech. Rav Sheshes says no. He says you can say it while you are traveling. But then we get a story. Rav Chisda and Rav Sheshes, havu ka'azli ba'orcha, the two participants in this debate, Rav Chisda and Rav Sheshes, are traveling on the road. Kam Rav Chisda v'kamatzli, and Rav Chisda stops in order to say Tefillas HaDerech. He says, you have to stop. Now, Rav Sheshes is blind. You have to know that for this story. So, Amar le Rav Sheshes l'shamei. Rav Sheshes says to his servant, Maika avad Rav Chisda. He senses that Rav Chisda's wagon has stopped. And he says, what's Rav Chisda doing? Why did he stop? So, Amar le kayu matzli. He said, he stopped in order to say Tefillas HaDerech, in order to daven. So, Amar le okuman nami l'didi v'atzli. So, he says, you know what? Then stop my wagon, and I will say it stop as well. Why? Miyos tov al tikare ra. Because of the principle of, if you can be good, don't be called bad. Meaning, if you have the option of doing things in the best possible way, why take advantage of some leniency in order to do it in a deficient way? If I have the chance to stop, because Rav Chisda is traveling with me anyway, and I'm going to wait for him anyway, right? He's going to have to catch up anyway. So let me stop and say Tefillas HaDerech too. And I say it's important beyond the scope of our shir, because this comes up in many areas of halacha. So for example, the principle of Midas Sidon when it comes to financial law. I may have an action I can legitimately pursue in the eyes of the law, which is going to benefit me, and cause harm to somebody else. And it's legitimate in the eyes of the law. But I have an equal option which will give me the same benefit without hurting somebody else. So that's what we call Midas Sodom. The trait of the people of Sodom would be to say, well, I don't care about him, I'm just interested in myself. And we're told you're not allowed to do that. If you have two options financially, one, and they'll benefit you equally, choose the option which won't harm other people. Same idea. If you can do something that's good and it's not going to cost you anything, why not do it? Or the concept behind certain, this is a larger topic, but that we often find that people will embrace a more stringent view, a chumrah of some kind, and say, well, why not? It's not going to hurt me to do it that way. Why? Because mi yos tov al tikare ra. If it's not going to hurt me to do it, why shouldn't I do it? If it's a better way to do things, assuming it really is, then why shouldn't I do it? So the Ran says the same principle applies here. It's true, one who is involved in a mitzvah is exempt from the other one. And it's true that that's even if he could do both. But if you truly have the option of doing both, and it's not going to cost you anything, then do both. What do you lose? Better to be a good person. So that's a principle that the Ran invokes on this. The Rambam, interestingly, omits the discussion about tefillin in his halachos. The Rambam does not include it. What was the position of the Rambam? Does he think that someone is in fact obligated in both mitzvos? Is that why? Does Rambam think that you have to actually do both and you can't say, well, I'm exempt from one while I'm doing the other? So the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, thought that the Rambam in fact believes that one is obligated in both based on a Yerushalmi. If you take a look at source number 4. The Yerushalmi says, Kosvei Sfarim Tefillin Umezuzos Mafsikin L'Kriyas Shema Vein Mafsikin L'Tefila. People who are writing Sifrei Torah Tefillin Mezuzah, they stop what they're doing in order to say Shema. They do not stop what they're doing in order to say Shmona Esrei. But they do stop for Shema. Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya, who also comes up as Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya, Omer Kishem Shemafsikin L'Kriyashma Kach Mafsikin L'Tefila U'Tefillin U'L'Sha'ar Komitzvoseh Ashel Torah. He says no. He says you stop for Shema, and you stop for Shmona Esrei, and you stop for Tefillin, and you stop for all other biblical mitzvos. So the Yerushalmi seems to indicate that in fact you are obligated to do the other mitzvah. So was that the Rambam's belief? And was the Rambam then saying that one who is involved in one mitzvah is still obligated in other mitzvahs? So the Magen Avraham, writing on the Shulchan Aruch's comment, says not necessarily. He says the Rambam does invoke the principle of Osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah in other cases. It must be that the Rambam here understood that this is talking about where you can do both without strain. Source number 4 is where you can really do both without it hurting you. If you have the option of pausing, doing Shema, Shmona Esrei, wearing tefillin, then you should do so. Like the Ran, in other words. So as a matter of psak, as a matter of halacha, take a look at source number 5. And you'll see two different views. The Shulchan Aruch first, Rabbi Yosef Karo, says, Kosvei tefillin u'mezuzos, those who write tefillin, those who write mezuzah, heim v'tagarehem, v'tagarehem, v'chola oskim b'malachas shamayim. They, their merchants, the retailers, all of them, and anyone involved in the work of heaven, peturim me'anachas tefillin kol hayom. They're exempt from wearing tefillin all day long. Zulas, except b'shas kriya shema u'tefila, except during Shema, except during Shmona Esrei. The Shulchan Aruch takes the view of Tosfos, that if you can do both, it takes the view of Tosfos, that if you can do both, you're obligated to do both. The Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, disagrees. He says, "V'mayu tzrichim lasas malachten b'shas kriya shema utfila, az peturin mi kriya shema utfila utfilin. D'chola ozeik b'mitzvah, hotter mi mitzvah acheres, im tzarech litroach achar acheres." He says, no. He says, if you need to do your work during kriya shema and tfila, you are exempt from shema, from tfila, from tfilin, from all of it, because if there's any strain involved, you are exempt from fulfilling both. But if you can do both without strain, so do both. So the position of the Rama is like the Ran. Now that matters, because as Ashkenazim, for those who are Ashkenazim, will follow the position of the Ramah. Those who are Sephardim will tend to follow the position of the Mechaber, of Rabbi Yosef Karo. So you have to know who says what. But the position of the Ramah is that the that you are obligated in both only if it wouldn't involve strain. If you take a look, no, don't take a look, because I didn't bring that either. The Mishnah Berurah sides with the view of the Ramah. The Mishnah Berurah is, for those who want to look it up, in Siman Ayin, Sivka and Yudches, so does the Aruch HaShulchan as well. And as a matter of fact, it even gets expanded further to the position of someone who's involved in what we call Tzarchei Tzibur, someone who's involved in the needs of the community, which doesn't mean a specific mitzvah, but looking after communal needs, which the Mishnah Berurah says, includes even financial needs of the community. A person is managing something for the community involving communal expenditures, he's exempt from other mitzvahs while doing so. That's how far we go with this. Now, there are two possible limitations. But what we've said so far, one who is involved in a mitzvah is exempt from other mitzvahs. What if he can do both and will have to work for it? Ashkenazim will say he doesn't have to do both. Sephardim will say he does. And the where you can do both without strain, then everybody agrees you have to do so. Okay, two possible limitations though. Number one, this might be specifically where you are involved in the actual mitzvah. If you take a look at source number six, the Ran says, the Ran talks about the issue of, and this is a classic in the Gemara, a person who is being meshiv aveda, who's restoring a lost item. What happens if I find a tennis ball on the street? And I know it belongs to so-and-so, or I don't, but I'm going to hold on to it and find out, you know, who's the owner. So I bring the tennis ball home, and I put it in my house. I am currently fulfilling a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, of returning lost objects. Someone knocks on my door and says, excuse me, can you provide tzedakah? My answer is, I'm sorry, I'm Pater Min HaMitzvah, because I'm busy right now, you know, watching someone's tennis ball. You laugh, but that case is discussed. So the Ran says, "Vaday b'shah she'aveda mishumeres b'tevaso lo mifter." When the lost object is locked up in your safe, you're not exempt from other mitzvos. You are not involved in what the tax people would call material pursuit of the original mitzvah. So that would not qualify. Rashi, as explained by the Sri Deish, says that it's because you are tarud, you are caught up in your current mitzvah. And if you listen to the language that the Ran uses in defining why you're exempt, it comes through there. He says, "Lefi shekol haosei shekol shaosei b'malachto shel makom lo chiyavto tara litroach lekayim mitzvos acheros aval pisha efshar." He says, because the idea of the exemption is, one who is involved in the work of heaven is not obligated by the Torah to strain and fulfill other mitzvos, even though it's technically possible. You are defined as being involved in the work of heaven, but only when you're actually involved in the work of heaven, not if you have no involvement whatsoever. Along with that, though...
Can Tosfos and Rashi and the Mechaber agree with that?
No. This is strictly the Ran.
Right.
So Rashi might.
Right. So, I mean, if using a tennis ball example, the Mechaber would say, no, you don't get stuck.
I think not. I think the Mechaber is more strict. Right? The Mechaber says that you have to be so involved in your mitzvah that you would not be able to break away and do the other one. In other words, the view of Tosfos and the Mechaber is that you have to actually, you are obligated to work to fulfill both. And your exemption is only if it's not possible to fulfill both. They're more strict. It's the Ran who's the lenient one and says you are exempt from working hard and you only need to do both if it's easy to do both. That's the position. You go back and take a look at the Mechaber in source number 5. He says they're potter from tefillin except during the time of Kriya Shema Utfila, because then you're able to do both. Whereas the Ramah says, no, you're exempt outright. That is the way we take it. But the other piece of this is... Sorry?
Not sure I read that. Okay.
How else would you read it?
You'll
be obligated to do both. Right, the Shulchan Aruch is saying, if you can do both, you are obligated to do both. That's the Shulchan Aruch statement. He says explicitly, "Pturim anachas tefillin kol hayom zulas bishas kriyash ma'ut tefillah." The same in Tosfos who was quoted in that run back in source number 2. He was talking about them traveling by the river, and he said the only reason they were exempt from sukkah at night was because they had no was because if they were to do sukkah, then they wouldn't end up going to hear the shir. That's the idea. The other piece of this is that it has to be an actual mitzvah. And this is a very interesting discussion in its own right. They talk about the case of a gabbai tzedakah. Gabbai tzedakah is a tzedakah collector. And the question of whether a tzedakah collector is actually exempt from, let's say, davening, when in the act of collecting tzedakah for ultimate distribution. So the Nesivos, Rabbi Yaakov of Lisa, found in source number 7, says no. He says there's no mitzvah of being a gabbai tzedakah. How this squares with the idea of looking after communal needs is an open question. I don't have an answer right now. But take a look at what he says. He says, "Achiv mutal al kol adam litein tzedakah." All are obligated to give tzedakah. Aval ein chiv umitzvas asay mutal al shum adam lios gabay tzedakah. But there's no obligation for someone to be a collector of tzedakah. Dim ayam mitzvas asay lios gabay. If there was in fact a mitzvah of be a gabay, how you call Yisrael mechuyavim lios gabayim? Then all Israel will be obligated to be tzedakah collectors. And it's not so. He says it's only incumbent upon Beis Din to do that. That's his argument. The Sde Chemed disagrees. Yeah.
But if you're Shaliach Beit Din, you are the Beit Din.
Yeah.
If you're a Gabbai Tzedakah appointed by the Beit Din, it doesn't hold water.
Are you? Does that make you like the Beit Din? I'm not so sure. Let's say the Beit Din appoints someone as Gabbai Tzedakah, and he at some point decides he wants to step down. According to you, that he has now accepted the obligation of the Beis Din, he will now have to find somebody else before he's allowed to step down.
Yeah.
We like to do that to our officers, but I'm not sure that's actually halacha.
But yes. Is a mitzvah necessarily a mitzvah for everyone? Because not, like, let's say a shochet. Is that a mitzvah to be?
That's a really good question. That's a really good question. Is shechita a mitzvah? Shechita is what we call a mitzvah kiyumit rather than a mitzvah chiyuvit. It's a mitzvah that you fulfill.
Right.
When you are doing it, it is a mitzvah. You are shechting it properly, but there's no obligation to go out and shecht.
So couldn't that be the same thing?
Yes, I'm really troubled by this source. I'm very troubled by it also in the context of what we said about Tzarchei Tzibur. I don't quite understand how that fits in. And also because we talk about people who are writing tefillin, writing mezuzah. There is no halacha that everyone must go out and write tefillin and mezuzos. If you do it, you are helping in a mitzvah for somebody who's going to need it to be able to fulfill a mitzvah. But I'm not obligated to be a sofer. Otherwise, just like he said for Gabbai Tzedakah, everyone would have to go out and become a sofer.
And it's for a lot of things, like even medicine, not everyone can be a doctor. Like we're fulfilling
right.
Exactly.
Well, that's where I was going to take this. Is there an obligation for everybody to study medicine? We assume not. We assume that it's a mitzvah to practice if you have the knowledge. But there's no obligation for people to go out and gain that knowledge in the first place.
But is there a source refuting this?
So the Sde Chemed takes this on, quoting the Aderet. It's I didn't bring it on the sheet, but the Sde Chemed, it's in Ayin Memhei. And he has a different angle on it, on combating this. He said, go back to our initial discussion about one who was involved in mitzvos being exempt from other mitzvos and our source case. One of our cases was Mishael and El Tzafan taking care of the body of the bodies of Nadav and Avihu, their family. He says, if those were Mishael and El Tzafan, that's why I could agree with the Nesivos. Because there's an obligation upon the family to take care of the deceased, that I could understand. But if it's those who are carrying Yosef's casket, they had no personal obligation to carry Yosef's casket. It's just that there should be someone who takes care of it. But it wasn't incumbent upon them personally, over and above anyone else's obligation. So his argument is from there. He says the fact that the Gemara could consider them someone involved in a mitzvah is exempt from another mitzvah says that it doesn't have to be a mitzvah that's personally incumbent upon you. But that's one open question, is this issue of the actual mitzvah question. what defines actual mitzvah. The other is, and this goes back to the question I was asked before, what if he's doing the mitzvah professionally? Right? What if he's a doctor, but he's going to get paid? At the end of the day, he's going to receive a check. So does that mean he's no longer called Osek B'mitzvah? So Rashi says something here, which the poskim read as being very significant. Frankly, if I were left to my own devices reading this Rashi, it would have totally gone over my head. But that's how we have poskim to read these. If you take a look at source number 8, on the line in the Gemara that said, Tagarehen, the merchants of the tefillin, people who are invested commercially, which I would have taken as an automatic exemption then for people who are engaged in a mitzvah commercially, because so are these tefillin merchants. But he says, Halokhin mehen, they buy the tefillin, they buy the mezuzah, they buy the sefer Torah off of a scribe, kidei limkor, in order to sell it, ulahamtzian litzarich lahem, and to make them available to those who need them. Say the poskim, aha! It's because they are doing it in order to make it available for people who need it. In other words, they're doing it for the sake of the mitzvah. That's why they are exempt. If they're purely involved commercially, then the fact that they are going to do a mitzvah while doing this is irrelevant. If their only interest is commercial, then they're not exempt from other mitzvahs. It's only because their goal in doing this is, I want to make the tefillin available to someone who needs tefillin. I'm really doing this because, out of the goodness of my heart, I want to make sure that people have tefillin to wear. I am a broker for Sifrei Torah. I connect communities and people who are going to have Sifrei Torah in with Sofrim. I do it not because I want to make money and this is a good way to make money, but because I want to make sure Sifrei Torah are written. That person is exempt from other mitzvahs. But if he's doing it because he dropped out of medical school and this is a good way that he can make a living, then he would not be exempt from other mitzvahs. That's the potential argument. The Magen Avraham challenges this. The Magen Avraham challenges it. If you take a look at source number 9, Rabbi Avraham Gambiner says, Mashma, it sounds from here as though, Dim Osek Kedeli Histaker Bolo Mikri Osek B'mitzvah. It sounds like someone who's doing it for profit is not called someone who's involved in a mitzvah. Right? That's what we just said. If it's solely for profit, then he's not called involved in a mitzvah. Well, he says, Vitzarech Iyun. This requires examination. Because, B'nedarim Daflamid Gimel, in the Gemara Nedarim, that's the one that talks about the person who brought home the tennis ball and now says, I don't have to give tzedakah. So there, mashmud sounds like the machzer aveda habi osek b'mitzvah. Someone who's restoring a lost object is exempt from other mitzvahs. Ava pisha notel alav sachar. Even though, if he has to miss his job in order to do it, he's actually going to be able to get paid for restoring the lost object. So he's getting paid, and yet you're telling me he's exempt from other mitzvahs. You could resolve the conflict, though, by pointing out that in the Gemara Nedarim, he's only getting paid whatever he would have lost because he's not engaged in his normal job. If he misses a day of work in order to return the lost object, he gets paid for that. But that's not called being paid. He's not doing it for profit. Inami hasam ikar kavanaso lahashiv aveda avalhacha ikar kavanaso lihistaker. Alternatively, he suggests a very important point, and the reason why I want to make sure to bring this Magen Avraham, he says, maybe it's a matter of intent. The person who returns the lost object wants to do a mitzvah. That's what he's in it for. He's not in it for getting paid. That's not why he does it. So even if he will get paid, that doesn't make this a commercial enterprise. It's still a mitzvah enterprise. Practical application for the doctor. The doctor is getting paid, but that's not why the doctor is practicing medicine. When the doctor is talking to the patient, when the doctor is doing surgery, when the doctor is looking at the x-ray, whatever it is, he's not thinking, how much money am I making for doing this? I'm doing this because I want to be able to put dinner on the table. He's doing it because he wants to help people. That's my assumption. Please don't disabuse me of that notion. Therefore, the doctor will fit into the Magen Avraham's definition of someone who is called Osek B'mitzvah, even though there is, in the end, remuneration. Yes?
Not to disillusion you, but even the mocher, tefillin, and whatever,
yeah.
Wouldn't you think that for most people there's a mix? You can't say it's pure for
yes.
Money or pure for mitzvah, it's probably a mixture of both.
Indeed. So the Ksav Sofer, the Ksav Sofer indeed rules in Tshuva Kuf Yud Ches that it has to be entirely for God, entirely for the mitzvah, in order to be exempt from other mitzvahs. And this is quoted in the Stechemet. But not everybody agrees. It's possible for there still to be that element of self-interest as long as the primary goal is the mitzvah. And we're going to talk about this in a minute when we get to the practical application. Everything we've done so far is theory. Yes?
I didn't find what you're saying is intuitive. Why should the fact that somebody's getting paid for doing something mean that he's not doing a mitzvah? If he is doing a mitzvah, why is being paid counteracting his doing a mitzvah? If somebody's, let's say, teaching Torah, that is a mitzvah.
Right.
The fact that he's getting a salary for teaching Torah, why does that make that any less of a mitzvah?
So I take you back to a discussion we had a few sessions back on the double effect. Right? We talked about the case in which you prescribe a treatment or engage in a therapy, whatever it is, which is also going to cause harm in some way. And what we said then was that your intent defines your deed. If your intent is to heal, the fact that it will also harm is not relevant. And we had nuances in how we saw that, and you know, sort of shortchanging what was in fact the whole shiur. But we do generally look at a person's kavana, at a person's intent, in order to define his conduct. And I think that we're drawing on the same principle here, that we will call you someone involved in a mitzvah if that's what you think you're doing. But if what you think you're doing is making money, then the fact that you're doing a mitzvah is just a side effect. If so, or to put it differently, you wouldn't do this if it wasn't for the income, then the mitzvah isn't really what you're engaged in. What you're really engaged in is making money. On the other hand, if you would say, if there was no mitzvah involved, I wouldn't do this, I'm doing it because of the mitzvah, then what you're doing is pursuit of a mitzvah, and the money is secondary. I think that's the way we're looking at it. I could understand another read, because the Ran, who I quoted before, said, Ha'osek b'malachto shamakom, lochiavto tara litroach. Someone who's involved in the work of God is not obligated to strain to fulfill another mitzvah. You could say, well, he is involved in the work of God, regardless of what his intent is. I understand the other view. But I think that this is the way that we generally look at it, is we define it based on what he considers primary and what he considers his motivation for doing whatever he's doing. That's the I can't take it beyond that. That's what I have. So let's try to apply the principle now and see where this takes us. Because there's an awful lot to say on a practical level. First of all, one who is treating a patient is exempt from other active mitzvos at that time. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted that way in the Nishmas Avram as making that statement. He's only responsible to do the other mitzvah if he can do it without strain, following the view of the Ran, quoted by the Ramah. And not only that, Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's stronger. He says stopping care right now to pursue the other mitzvah would constitute an avera. That's an avera. You're now halting a mitzvah which you are supposed to be doing. So he's very strong. Now, what about the fact that he's paid? So we generally tend to assume, as I perhaps naively assume, that the intent really is medical care and the intent is not commercial benefit. And take a look at source number 10 and a comment quoted from Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. There are others who are quoted as well. I only brought you one. But he says, Kosev Hagon Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein Shlita, Rofe o Achot, a doctor or nurse, Ava Pishakol Avodasa Hurak Avur Sachar, even if you're going to tell me that all of his work is for pay, Gam Rofe Kazeh Hu Meshiv Aveda. This doctor is still called someone who is returning a lost object, giving the paradigm from the Gemara. The Eimacha Meshiv Aveda Gedola Mizu. He says there is no stronger case of someone returning a lost object than this. V'lachein, and therefore, Mikevan Shebisha'as Avodasa Hu Eino Miskava in Leschar Klal, since when he's working, he's not thinking about the money at all. El osek b'stam l'shem ripui achole. He is involved simply because he wants to heal the patient. V'tipulo, and his care. And he says in parentheses, v'hu hadin achot. The same thing is true regarding a nurse. Who etzem ha-mitzvah, that is the actual mitzvah. Yesh lo din ka-osek b'mitzvah. He has the status of somebody who is involved in a mitzvah, and he's exempt. Yes.
Does this apply to students?
Does this apply to students? We're going to come to it. Hang on. But that's the opening position. Now, actually, it's going to come up right now. What about the fact that we said he has to be engaged in a mitzvah, and there is no obligation to become a physician? So in other words, now I'm not talking about the student now, I'm talking about the doctor who's actually practicing. So what about that? So Nishmas Avram says it's not an issue for two reasons. Number one, he says, it may be true that a doctor is not obligated to become a doctor, but he is currently hands-on involved in doing a mitzvah. Whatever brought him to this point is irrelevant. And second, the distinction between obligated and not obligated doesn't apply if you are actually doing the mitzvah. And this is a comment from the Be'er Halacha, which I didn't have space for on here, but Be'er Halacha and Arachayim Lamed Ches. But he says specifically, when you're doing the mitzvah, it doesn't matter whether you had an obligation in it or not. So the person who's writing the Sefer Torah for somebody else, the person who's writing the Tefillin of the Mezuzos, it doesn't matter that he had no obligation. Ditto for the Shochet, ditto for the medical practitioner. Whether he was obligated to do it is not relevant. However, this will have application, indeed, in terms of medical school. One who is in class, it would appear, would not be exempt from davening. I'm hoping that he's going to catch up later. I don't, you know, otherwise I don't really want him to be my doctor. But it has to be where he would catch up later. That's correct.
I think that little aside comment that you made is an important thing. Becoming a doctor is in itself becomes an obligation. He is, as it were, doing something which will be important later on in his life.
Right.
So you could argue that what he's doing right now is in a sense of his life.
Right. The question is, how comfortable are we extending it to that point when what we're talking about is potentially pulling him out of biblical obligations? I mean, this isn't just... it's true that what he's doing will be important, but what we're talking about here is a biblical obligation of saying Shema, or we could be talking about other obligations along the same lines. Yeah, at a certain point, we do have to draw a line and say, okay, this we can define clearly as a mitzvah, this we can't. Now, I didn't ask the Shaila about the one who is attending a class in medical school. I did ask the question about someone who is teaching a class in medical school and whether that would count. And I asked it to Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham, who referred it to Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth. And his answer was, it's not. He says someone who was teaching a class in medical school would be obligated to still daven. He couldn't say, I'm exempt because I'm engaged in this mitzvah. I believe the same thing is true regarding the students.
Wait, yes. So then we have to also, I mean, it gets a little complicated. The student, are we talking about the medical student or the resident going for a specialty? Because in practicality, the resident has less flexibility to skip out and do something than the specialist who can modify his time a little bit more according to how
right.
he or she wants.
As I understand it, and please correct me if I understand it incorrectly, but the resident is already a medical practitioner.
Yeah.
Right, so that's beyond the state of student that I'm referring to. I'm talking about someone who's ground level learning anatomy for the first time. I'm not talking about someone who's in the area where what he learns now is going to be his practice tomorrow.
And, yeah. and again, they may have less flexibility.
Right.
To skip out.
That may be true, but the question is, well, what would he do with it?
I'm not sure what you're saying is correct.
Okay.
So, Gedalia Felder, Lo Hashalom. When I was a medical student, and Sam Silverberg and others told
yes.
us to be Mechalel Shabbat while we were students in order to learn how to do it.
He said Mechalel, or he said... The reason I ask is because...
Is that in English?
It literally is desecrate Shabbat.
We were told to write and do whatever we needed the Shinoi with the change in order to learn how to do it.
That's very interesting. Edward Felder obviously isn't here to ask at this point. But I'll tell you why I find it interesting. We discussed the question of attending conferences on Shabbos. Did I give that one here yet?
No.
No. That's the next one. So I don't know the ending. But there we do talk about the issue of needing to learn via that. And there the poskim do say, and I believe Rav Felder is one of them, Rav Gedalia Felder in Yisodei Yeshurun was one of them, said that you do attend, but that you don't write. In other words, he said to attend the conference, but not to engage in the writing. So I'm not clear on where he would have sanctioned writing. But the reason why I wonder about the student in medical school is what's the difference between that, the student in medical school, who is going to be exempt from certain things because we call this a mitzvah, and we do there use the term mitzvah, and on the other hand, the doctor who goes off to the conference. I'm not clear on the boundary between learning, where we say it's pre-mitzvah, and learning as mitzvah. It's probably something I should look into further and then get back to everybody about, because it's worth checking into.
So again, I would suggest the boundary is practicing on a patient who's live in front of you is different from sitting in a class and hearing something. But it was the practicing on the patient we were talking
about. But the leniency regarding conferences applies even when it's not, and even especially when it's not, because practicing on the patient introduces new questions. So I'm not sure I would go with that distinction. So let me get back to everybody with it. Yes.
And just another dimension to this, but related, when it comes to studying on Shabbos, which of course relates to both of these, the medical doctor, once finished, and my understanding is that as a halacha, they can study on Shabbos, but the medical student cannot. So you see that this idea is how, in other words, in line with what you're saying, runs a certain line that says that studying on Shabbos is permissible because of the reasons that we said it's a mitzvah, but only after you're already at the point where you're finished as a practitioner. It's not true if you're still in the student stage.
I mean, this is all part of the same question. This is all part of the same question.
Maybe it's a whole other
thing. I remember the tension very, very well as an adult student, thinking that if I didn't study 7 days a week, I may not make it through, but I think there's this feeling of there's so much stuff I have to do. You have to start making a strategic calculation. Maybe I'm not going to do this part, so I can emphasize on this part, and I hope they don't ask an awful lot about this part. But because you just really run out of time.
As a patient, I hope I don't need the
other part. Right, so therefore, you want to have, I think, a doctor who actually spent all their time becoming the best doctor they can be. And I think there is that tension.
But the formulation that you're giving is also an interesting formulation, because on the one hand, you said it's about the test, and will I make it through because if they ask me about this part, I would be less likely to sanction doing that on Shabbos than the latter concern of, will I need this in order to treat patients? And if I don't learn it now, will I ever get it?
You
won't know. There's no way to know that.
Right. No, but once you're getting through, then you start actually doing stuff you really do need to know.
Right.
But there is this practical reality of getting through medical school before you can start doing the things you really have to learn.
Right.
And I agree. Like, I think in a way, in that I think what you're learning as a medical student in some ways is more of, because this is the basics. This is what your foundation is, right? Whether I go to the conference or not, my colleague may not go to that conference, and they still may somehow, through, you know, online something, get that same information.
Correct.
Right? So you didn't have to go to that conference, but you do have to learn the basics.
Right. When we talk about the conferences, we'll see some nuances in terms of that exact question. But I want to do the research on this and come back to you with it, because this is worth investigating. Yes. As was mentioned in the piece I excerpted. Okay. So, taking this further, a doctor seeing patients is exempt. Is a doctor going to be required to daven a makeup, to do a makeup davening? So, the Taz says no. The Taz says you're obligated to do a makeup, writing on the Shulchan Aruch. However, the overwhelming weight of halachic authorities is that no, there is no such obligation. If you take a look at source number 12, Oh, the tefillin was there. It was in source number 11, the Bir Halacha that I mentioned. All right. But in source number 12, the Magen Avram writes, Ein Tzarich Lispala Mincha Shtayim, Kevin de B'Shas Chava, so Haya Pater Min Adin. One who missed Shacharis because he was involved in a mitzvah does not now do a makeup. He was legally exempt. And that goes back to the point that I made earlier, which you see in source number 13 from the Nishmas Avram. You have to be exempt throughout the time of obligation for davening. If you were able to do it and for the first hour of the Zman, of that time, and you didn't, then you can't say, well, I'm exempt now because I was practicing medicine during the rest of that time. In such a case, you would need to do a tashlumin. You would need to do a makeup Shemona Esrei with the next davening. What about women? Does this differ at all for women? So, if you take a look at source number 14, you find the Gemara's statement about women's obligation to daven. V'chayavin b'tvila derachmei ninhu. The Gemara says women are obligated in prayer, for it is a request for mercy before God, meaning even though prayer is time-bound, and therefore I might have assumed that women would be exempt as they are from certain mitzvahs that are time-bound, when it comes to davening, women are not exempt. The question, though, is, what is the nature of their obligation? Making a long story short, it's a machlokas, it's a debate between the Rambam and the Ramban. According to the Rambam, women are exempt from the formal tefillah structure that we are familiar with. They simply need to turn to God once a day and say, God help me. Which, if you're not doing, you're probably not breathing anyway. But that's the Rambam. Ramban disagrees. Ramban's position is that women are obligated in Shacharis and Mincha. And that's what's being referred to in source number 14. In that Gemara, women are obligated to actually daven Shacharis, and women are obligated to actually daven Mincha. When I say daven, I'm referring to Shmona Esrei here. I'm not referring to the other pieces of it. If you look at the weekly halacha that I had in the bulletin this Shabbos, you'll see a point that's relevant to that. But that's the Ramban's position, and that's how the Mishnah Brura rules, that women are in fact obligated in Shacharis and Mincha, and therefore all of the rules that we've been talking about missing and making up and all that, will pertain to them with one exception. This doesn't obligate women in Maariv. Maariv is unique, because Maariv begins as a reshus. Initially, Maariv was optional in general. It was something to do, a good thing to do, for men as well as for women. Because it became the formal prayer that men did, it was accepted as obligatory, and for men it is viewed that way, but women never took it on, and therefore are exempt. Therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, and the Nishmas Avram quotes it, that if a woman misses Mincha, he says, she should do Maariv twice, even if she doesn't normally daven Maariv. I'm looking at my own notes and seeing that I have some kind of a typo in my own notes. Let me follow up with that afterwards, because I want to make sure that what I say is correct. I'd like to not perpetuate errors. So I have a typo in my own notes. I'm not sure whether I was saying that she should daven Maariv twice or that she should not daven Maariv twice. Yes. Yes.
Or do you say Tarat Malata, and therefore he is, because you can't do a tashlumin if you purposely had intended to miss the opportunity.
Right.
So let's say your day is structured such that you know going into the day you're not going to daven mincha.
Right.
So it brings up the category that tashlumin is not even an option for you.
Correct. So this is discussed, and the answer is that the Chuvos suggest that where he started out thinking that he would have the option, he started out thinking he'll be able to carve out 15 minutes for Mincha, and then it didn't work out, he does do Tashlumin. If he structured his day such that he wouldn't, that's another story. But if he thought he would have the time, and then he just ended up working straight through, he would be able to do Tashlumin, he would be able to do the makeup. There are some key things I still want to get to, that I want to make sure to reach, so I'm going to move along with this. What is considered involved in the mitzvah? Is it actually seeing patients? So the answer is it's actually broader than that. If you take a look at source number 15, the Nishmas Avram, quoting Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth, the Nishmas Avram says, Shamati Mimori Harav Hagon Rabbi Yeshua Nur Shlita Sharofe Pater Mitfila. A doctor, he says, is exempt from davening. Lo rak bisman shu bodeku mitapel b'chole. Not only when he is actually treating a patient who is ill or checking a patient who is ill, afilu shein bo sakana, even if he's not dangerously ill, ela gam bisman shu asuk b'ksiva b'tik ha'chole, even when he is writing in the patient's file, in his record, v'afilu bisman shu kosev michtamei shichur, and even if he's writing release documents. He calls it a mugdar ka'osek b'mitzvah. All of this is considered involvement in the mitzvah and is included in the exemption. Not only that, it even extends to the time when a doctor is taking a needed break. Now, here I have to distinguish between theory and practice. What I'm going to say right now is theory, and then I'll follow up with practice. The theory is, when a doctor takes a break, it's in order to help him to do the mitzvah better, to take care of patients better after the break. So take a look at source number 16. It's a morbid example, but it's relevant. Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, the author of Mishnah Berurah, writes in his Bir Halacha regarding a gravedigger. The gravedigger. He says, V'chein ha-chofer kever lemeis pater mikulam. Someone who is digging a grave for a deceased person is exempt from all of them, meaning all mitzvos. Aval pi shenach me'at. Even though he's going to rest for a bit. Shegam b'sha'as nucho nikra adayin osek b'mitzvah. Even when he is resting, he is called involved in a mitzvah. Shal yedei zeh sheyischazek kocho lachzor b'lachpor. Because through this, he will regain his strength, he'll be able to go back and dig more. So the argument is made regarding the physician as well. He may have a 10-minute break at some point between patients, but he needs that in order to regenerate. And if he's going to use that in davening, then he's not going to be able to regenerate. That's all in the realm of theory. The reason I say it's all in the realm of theory is because when I gave this shiur at Shari Shamayim, I did it with a little bit of it. I didn't include as much of certain things as I have here. But I did address this point. And afterwards, a physician came up to me and said, "You've got to be kidding." He says, "All doctors take breaks during the day." He's a urologist who practiced for decades. He says, "All doctors take breaks." I didn't say who it was. "All doctors take breaks during the day, and they don't need every minute of their break, and they can certainly find time to daven minchas." Is that why surgeries take hours and hours? I don't know. But that's what he said. So your mileage may vary, is the answer. But if the break is necessary in order to enable you to be able to continue seeing patients, then based on this line from Mishnah Berurah, you are absolutely exempt during the break as well. Yes?
That brings up a side issue which you may not want to comment about now, but that is that health professionals are required to look after their health in order to be able to practice their profession.
True.
That's what you just said.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. The question is how to gauge what's needed and whether davening is going to take away from the refreshing character of my break, or frankly may improve the refreshing character of my break. You know, I could definitely see the argument the other way. So a couple of last points here. The question was asked of me in the run up to this. What if one could daven while driving? So should one daven while driving? You're someone who travels around seeing patients in different places, maybe doing home care. So, you know, what if you could do Shmoneh Esrei while you are driving? So the answer is please don't do that. Please don't do that. Number one, because I'm another driver on the road, and I would like to get from point A to point B, and I didn't want to do it behind or next to someone davening Shmoneh Esrei. Number two, we generally say one is not allowed to recite Shmoneh Esrei while driving. That's not going to be a valid Shmoneh Esrei. If you're a passenger in a car and you have no other option to daven, then indeed we say, so you daven sitting down and you keep your legs together and you get up a little bit when it comes to bowing. If you have no other options. But as a driver, absolutely not. There is an option of what's called tefillah kitzara, a shortened version of the Shmoneh Esrei. I think the Art Scroll includes it after Mincha. And a person who is in a case of need, let's say you have this person who is going to see patients all day long, following the view of the Ran and the Ramah, is not going to have the opportunity without straining of davening, but they could fit in The Tefillah Kitzara, the shortened version of Shemona Esrei. It's the opening three brachos, a paragraph, which is a summary of the middle brachos, and then the closing three brachos. That they can do. So that's what they should do. They should say the Tefillah Kitzara. That's what it was designed for. So in sum, and I skipped a couple of cases that weren't as relevant for people because I want to get to two more key questions that I sent in as shilas to Poskim. But in sum, what we're saying is medical care constitutes a mitzvah. Not only immediate medical care, but also the backup steps that we talked about, and even the break in between. And indeed, according to the Ran and the Rama, one would be exempt from davening when doing this, even if he could strain to fit it in. Whereas according to Tosfos and the Shulchan Aruch, he would be obligated to strain and fit both in if it was at all possible. The follow-up questions, though, that I was asked. Number one. What if the shul needs you as 10th man for a minyan? Do we still say you're exempt because you're involved in a mitzvah? Now this is a what we call mitzvah derabim. It's a communal mitzvah. So I asked the question of Rav Herschel Schechter and he said no. He said if it overrides Karban Pesach in the Gemara here, which is the highest of the high in terms of one's active mitzvah, so it has a penalty of kares for missing it, it certainly also overrides the being the 10th man for the minyan. So that was one key follow-up question. The other follow-up question is, what about if you are a physician who's involved in a staff meeting? So it's not a staff meeting about treating patients. It's just a office type of a thing that you have to participate in as part of being a practitioner in the office. So would you be exempt for that? And would you be exempt for, as I mentioned earlier, teaching medical professionals? So because Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth was the one who said that writing in a patient's file and writing release documents counts as medical care, I asked the question to Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Avram, who sent the question to Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth, and his answer was no. He said the staff meeting does not qualify, and teaching the medical practitioners does not qualify either. He said it's not considered to be on that level that it would override the obligation to daven. So I still have to look into the question that remains, the question of attending the medical class, for the medical student versus for the current medical practitioner, and what we'd say about that, as well as the question of the woman who has to daven mincha, who has to miss mincha, but is in a position to do tashlum and to do the makeup, that we still need to address. Thank you very much.